Welcome to the MacGuffin Nest.
Hello, honey. I know you haven't heard much from me since I moved away. Hello, honey. I think I'm all done running. This time I'll stay. If you let me, my fickle heart.
Welcome to MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex. Not with me today is James, but we've got a very special guest. We've got Luke from Ivory Hours.
Hello.
And Luke is a part of a good band that I do a lot of work for, and I thought it would be fun to have him on the podcast. Luke, I said I was going to try and avoid the basic questions that you would get asked in every interview, but can you sort of very quickly explain the... I don't know, what the genesis of Ivory Hours, the band itself?
Sure. Mm. I mean, we are going through a lot of changes now, I guess, as well. But it began when I was at university. I think that was 2012. I'd made a bunch of demos. They were kind of like folk stuff. A lot of them mashed up with like kind of like hip-hop beats because I had a recording program. Anyways, ended up moving out to Vancouver to play with some people there and then came all the way back to London town. We've been back here for a year working on a new sound as well.
Cool. Now, when you listen to music outside of your own, like, what are you listening for primarily? Like, because I, whenever, you know, I'm very interested in arts and I know how I watch movies, right? Which is the thing I care the most about in arts, which I'm presuming music is that for you. I'm curious to know how you sort of consume music, like how you think about it. You
know? For sure. I think, yeah, there's so many different ways, right? Because there's, like, the pure, just, like, enjoyment of it, which is fewer and farther between for me these days, because usually now I'm listening for either, like, audio production kind of elements or, like, songwriting and that kind of thing. It's like, and mostly you listen to music that think you could steal from. I think there's like there's a quote, David Bowie quote or something like that. But I just read this book called Steal Like an Artist, and I really agreed with that kind of thing, that you just listen to stuff that inspires you and that you'd be able to absorb.
Yeah, for sure. I understand that entirely. And the more I know about film, that is not a music specific frame of mind or frame of thinking.
For sure.
When you do listen to a song, like say a song grabs you, like you hear it once and you're like, oh, I'm going to listen to that again. When you start to go through it, listening to it again, over time, how does the listening experience sort of change, or does it change at all? And you just sort of, or do you just sort of like focus on the same thing that first grabbed you to the song?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I think it's like maybe a song to song thing. You definitely like hear elements if it's a really good song and it's produced well. You always find other reasons to like it. I think the way my brain works, I generally absorb melody first. So the first go through, it's a lot of that. And then the more you listen to it, or the more I listen to it, the more I'm able to pay attention to the lyrics and absorb some more of that. And so, yeah, I guess more getting involved in the story of it.
Okay. And so taking that to your own songwriting, where do you start when you write a song? Like, do you start with the melody, or do you start with something you want to write about, like that you want the lyrics to be about, or is it sort of a thing that changes?
Most often it's the music, or it's like some element of music. So I find that you get a different song if you use a different instrument to start it, so whether that's bass or drums or guitar, very minimally synth for me. But yeah, so usually I'll start with a beat, throw some kind of, like, usually guitar or that, something melody-based, or then also bass. Like, we do such, like, kind of dancier stuff now, so the bass is such a good way of having something really, really dynamic and funky that way. But yeah, then it's after that that I start to attack the lyrics, and then, you know, with, like, a basic melody. It's really funny, like, if you hear the way that it comes together, it's like a person going insane in a room, because you're just, like, making all these stupid sounds and using words that don't really make any sense just to try and, like, grasp a melody that really gets you going, mm-hmm. and then moving from there. Then once you get, like, sometimes you start with, like, a first line, and then that can kind of inform the rest of the song. And also, like, the character of the melody, whether it's going to be something, you know, happy or, like, bittersweet, which is usually the way it ends up going.
Yeah. is there sort of, is there an example that you can give of sort of, like, with a song that you have previously recorded where you can sort of elaborate a bit on that build process? Because I find that kind of interesting.
For sure. Actually, Mary's a great example of that, too. I was listening to a bunch of Beach Boys, and then I really liked this one simple drum beat, so I took that and I just threw it down, programmed it in, and then the bass line came from that, just kind of following the rhythm of that beat, and then you know, you just, like, plug a guitar in, and I happened to have the delay going and got that weird kind of, like, bouncing sound thing going, so I was super stoked on that. And then, yeah, then, like, that would turn into the intro, and then I let the bass keep going, and you work on a verse, and I just, like, spit out this line. Was like, it was actually, the original name was Sally. It was like, Sally felt a little low, needed to pick me up. And it was, like, from that entire thing that it evolved, ended up changing the name to Mary and stuff like that. But it just became the story about this person who isn't really real, but.
Mm-hmm. And how long does this, how long does the process typically take of you sort of starting a song for it being ready to, let's say, ready to hit the studio? Because I think that once you get to the studio, there's a whole bunch of other things to consider probably, right? But what's the sort of timeline for something like that?
True. I would say, I don't know, it rings pretty true that the best stuff happens very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That can also, like, happen at separate times for me. Like, I think when you're really inspired, you can get a whole bunch of stuff out really quick. Like that Mary tune, because I'm usually recording at the same time, you know, the whole thing comes out in an hour, you know, and it's all there. And then other times it takes a little bit longer because you'll get one piece, like that new single I showed you, you get one piece and then maybe like a melody that doesn't quite work for you, but if you sit there and try and force something out, you just end up getting more poo. So you got to step away from it, and then you come back, and I just try and, like, hit it with, as long as you hit it with kind of like a fresh mind, you can get a lot in a short amount of time, mm-hmm. and then the muse, she runs away.
And we've mentioned kind of offhandedly that the other two members in the band, Chris and Tom, the bassist and drummer, where do they come into the process typically?
Usually that's kind of like a mostly finished tune, you know, and we write pretty fairly structured stuff now, you know, with verses and choruses and bridges and that kind of thing. So it's like, it's set out, and then it's, you know, they can pick that up really quick. And that's another, like, realm or round of testing for me, is if they can pick up a song, you know, in 15 minutes, then that means it's decent enough for, I guess, for us to keep going with it. But and then from there, it's working on the dynamic, because you know I'm not as good, nearly as good of a drummer as Tom, or a bassist as Chris. So definitely, and especially when I'm recording stuff into, you know, into it like a digital program, it all ends up sounding kind of flat. So when you're working with other human beings, you can have something, you know, like parts of the song build and get quieter and louder and choruses and that kind of thing. And just, I think the dynamics really get improved there.
Okay, cool. And stepping outside of the band a little bit, like how do you view sort of the modern music climate, you know? Just sort of the world that music exists in now, the way people have to put out music now.
That's a big question.
It's not a small question.
Yeah. I don't know. I learn more about it every day, and it's like, I feel like, it's more, it's almost like my attitude changes about it more so than the industry itself changes the more I find out. You know, it seems like it's almost always been the same. Like, it's a completely saturated market full of people who are completely passionate about what they do. So it's so competitive. I guess like the mediums have changed, right, with the internet. But again, it seemed, you know, like it was supposed to be so much easier for people now to reach fans, but now, you know, people are just saturated in a different way. So it's still like, you know, very, very hard to break through a lot of layers and reach people in that sense. So, yeah, you have to be, I think, very, very creative and very authentic now. People are, I mean, in terms of image and branding and that kind of thing, people really want to connect with you as a person more so than with, like, some record labels kind of representation of what a group is, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. And how, speaking of keeping the Ivory Hours thing authentic, like how do you try to do that? Like, what is it, sort of a thought that goes through your mind, and then you're like, oh no, I can't do this, or this falls in line with how we present ourselves.
I guess in like, you know, in like our social media stuff, it's like trying to have as authentic of a, like, make it's you writing it and make it sound like you, right? Not like you're like selling things to people, but you're actually like inviting them into what you're doing, and just being very open in that sense. And then it's, in like all marketing efforts like that as well. Same with your recordings or like another thing like that, you know, like not dressing them up in a way that you can't reproduce or that doesn't, you know, feels outside of the way that you would like to play it, kind of thing. Because you could do that, you know, you could produce, you can turn any song into like a, you know, rave dance kind of like
10-minute dance remix of, of every song on Mary.
It could be done, but that's not, you know, that's not us, that's someone else. So trying to stay true, as like crazy as that is,
sounds maybe. Yeah, stay true to an aesthetic, at least. You know? Okay, so you are currently in and out of the studio recording your new album, your first full-length album. First of all, tell me what it feels like to be back in the studio again.
Studio is my favorite place in the earth. And so at home. So it's, and especially at EMAC here in London, too, it's really familiar. We did the last EP there, and we worked with Matt and Kyle, the two engineers working on it. And we had an absolute blast last time, and so now we've got Dan Broadbeck is working on it with us as well, co-producing, and he's another just, like, character. So we have, aside from, like, the recording fun, it's just the personalities there are so fun as well. So that's been going really well. We got the drums and bass done last weekend in extraordinary time. Chris and Tom just absolutely killed it. And then we did some guitars yesterday.
Cool. Ned, this is your first sort of full length album. What about the process of writing and at least to this point recording? What has changed and about the process? Yeah. Aside from the fact that you need more songs.
Yeah, more tunes.
Yeah.
For sure. I would say that I've taken a few more chances with this one, in the sense that I didn't have everything completely worked out. When I mean structurally, the songs were together, mm-hmm. before we went in the studio, but I've left you know, like a lot of overdubs and that kind of thing to the time of recording, which is really nice because you get like a good mojo going and you get some stuff that, you know, I'm gonna end up hearing the mixes back and not remember these pieces that we put in because we did them right, you know, off the cuff, and that's gonna be really exciting, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And you talked about this a bit, but like, what's the vibe in the studio like generally? You mentioned that the guys you're recording with are pretty fun. I know Chris and Tom are pretty fun as well. Just how does it feel to be in there recording songs that you've written? Like, how does that feel? Yeah. How was your weekend basically when you were in the studio?
It feels awesome. It feels like when you get people like that are passionate about it too, that's better than, I don't know, that's the best feeling in the world to me, because most of the time, you know, especially when I'm demoing and stuff, it's just me in a room and playing all this stuff, and you know, you're just like, it's like any, I think a lot of like artisty people are like that, where you go through these like kind of moody phases where you're not sure if what you just did was good, and it's just like, it's so nice to be able to bounce that off people and have that kind of just have people to kind of run things by. Mm-hmm. Especially like having a co-producer like Dan as well. He's also, you know, a guitarist and accomplished musician, so, and it's just neat because he's going to mix the record too, so you know, I can like play a part and be like, is that garbage? Like, are you going to want to ever, you know, use that in the final mix? And it's a yay or nay. It's just like, it's such a neat kind of, very honest and, yeah, it's a nice working environment.
Yeah, for sure. So can you just tell me a bit about the process, sort of from, of being in the studio, like from setup to editing? I know you're kind of in the middle of it, but, you know, like one of the things, I had never been in a recording studio before for a recording session as big as yours. And just that Friday was just setup and setting up mics and everything. And that made sense the second I saw it, but it was just a totally new idea to me. Like, I had no idea that was a thing, you know?
For sure. There's lots to it for sure. And I mean, we kind of went overboard especially when you were there with the mics. I mean, we had two drum sets set up, that one of which we won't end up using, but I mean, the general flow is get the, what you call beds, which is bass and drums, and get them recorded, then guitars and like key layers, and then you finish up with vocals is the typical kind of mode. But drums are like by far the most complicated thing to record. I mean, there's probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 mics on that drum set, and just getting all that stuff to gel together. Not to mention the fact that you actually have to like tune the drums themselves and make sure you're getting the timbres that you want out of them. Like, I really like low tuned drums, so just getting that stuff going takes a bit of time.
Mm-hmm. I guess tell us when we can expect to hear the record.
Ooh, I was just chatting with some PR folks this morning, but I'm thinking that we will have a single out by the beginning of April, a second single in May, and a full record hopefully by June.
Cool. I'm excited to hear it. And if you could sort of describe the sound of the record itself, or how you gather that it will end up sounding when it's finished, how would you describe it?
It is a party record for introverts.
That sounds great. That sounds like the kind of music I want to hear.
There you go.
All right, Luke, thanks for joining us, and thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to hearing the record.
It's a pleasure.
Oh my dear, please love, or let me go, a broken home. It's like a graveyard,
and I'll fade away. I'll fade away from you. Oh, and I'll stay away. I'll stay away. I'll stay away. I'll stay away from you. No, you won't see me again.